my dad, when he was decommissioned after the war, he was a medic on the front lines in Czechoslovakia during the war. And afterwards, he was decommissioned in Greensboro, North Carolina. So my dad and my mom and I were there for a couple of years. And again, it was just at that time. My dad took me to a tobacco auction. And I can remember it. My dad never saw me. My mom was pregnant when my dad was shipped overseas. I was a war baby. I was born in 1940. And so when he came back in 45, and then we went for a year down to Greensboro, I heard the banjo for the first time. And he took me to a tobacco auction, and I remember an old boy sitting there. I remember he had overalls on. I remember his banjo was small, and I reckon, thinking back, it probably was a fretless. Mm-hmm. And I just can remember driving my dad nuts. And I was not the type of kid who whined for stuff and was, you know, I mean, they were very frugal during the war, and things were very tight. But I remember just thinking when I was a kid, I have to make that sound. I have to do that. And my dad ordered a banjo for me through Sears Roebuck, and he got me an old Fairbanks banjo, which was the forerunner of the White Lady. And you could do that years ago through Sears Roebuck. So I got my first banjo when I was about 9, and I had no idea what to do with it.
Well, I was going to say, just because you have a banjo.
That's right, because the banjo didn't go to the North, of course. I mean, it was not even indigenous, because it was brought over by Moroccans, it was brought by Turks, it was brought by African slaves. It's a melting pot of so many different cultures. And I hadn't got a clue what to do with it, because the banjo had never reached up into New England, never went past the Virginias, and maybe slipped into Maryland a little bit. So I haven't got it. So my dad took me. He just knew. It was so great. But being a musician himself, he took me down to visit a friend of his in Hendersonville, North Carolina. A friend of his from New Hampshire had moved down there. And I used to go down every chance I could get and just sit and listen to people play and just started to play along with
them. So you just watch and listen?
Just watched
and
listen.
And then try to mimic?
Watched
or?
And listen and just tried to play along. And then I'd have to go back home again. And by that time, I was beginning to grab the rudiments of frailing. But
this is late 1940s,
this
early
would have
1950s?
Been, I graduated from high school in 1957. I was a year ahead of myself.
Okay.
So by the time I reached high school, 54, early in high school, we formed a square dance group. There was a guy called R.J. Plunkett, who was a great fiddle player from Fairleigh, Vermont. He lived across the river, and his name was Plunkett, and he only went by initials R.J. And then we had a guy in my class who was a wonderful mandolin and guitar player, and how he learned, I don't know, maybe his folks taught him or something, maybe they were from the South. His name was Sterling Clink, and our band was called Plunkett and Clink.
It was,
and we played for the square dances, and we probably had no idea, but it worked, and we played, because we had square dances up north as well as contra dances and stuff. So we had a melting pot of Appalachian stuff going on, and we had English contra dancing, and we played for everything. And there was a guy called Dudley Loftman who has become since then a great dance master. He goes over to Britain and teaches contra dancing from New Hampshire, from Canterbury, New Hampshire, all the way over to England to teach English dance. It was that important back in the 40s and 50s. So I was very lucky. That's all I can say. I was so lucky to be part of all of this.
When you would take the trips south to North Carolina whenever you could, and you'd come back so you would have heard and seen and learned more, were you able to hear were records of banjo music available where you were, or did you?
Yeah, but I just started gathering in all sorts of different ways of learning. You know, a lot of it was from just listening to people live, because at that point I was old enough to drive, and I would get myself down into the South to play and to sing and immerse myself in songs, so that eventually the repertoire I had began to outweigh the New England repertoire. And so now I have a strong repertoire of both, but just literally hundreds and hundreds of songs. But then I didn't want to stop there, because to me, every region is important. The immigrant movement took people to every corner of America. And so many regions get sort of left by the wayside. People don't realize what great traditional songs there are in the Panhandle, in the Great Plains area, in the western, in the southwestern and northwestern states. And so everywhere I've gone and everywhere I've lived, I've just collected and collected and collected and learned tunes and learned them. And I try to learn them live as much as I can, because that's the way I've pretty much learned songs. And I don't think there's a better way to learn them.
When you collect a song, you try to do it live,
yeah,
if possible.
Oh, yeah.
Then and commit it to memory?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And
how many you got up there?
Oh, my God. My husband, well, put it this way. My husband, Dave, looks at me sometimes, and he just shakes his head, and he says, Sarah, my God, one day your head's going to burst open, and these thousands of songs are going to fall on the floor in this pile in this pile. I couldn't even begin to count them. I do not know. Some of them, this is so awful to say, some of them are still on bits of toilet paper. Some of them are written sideways up the margin of things. Most of them I just hear it once or twice, and it's just, especially if it's a ballad, I can just take it in. It's much easier to learn a ballad than a 15-verse song that's not interconnecting in any way. So, but your mind is trained that, you know, if it's something you love and it's just something that's such a passion, it just, I reckon it keeps me from getting senile at my age. It's probably the only thing.
A great exercise, sure.
It is, I'm sure.
You have this mad fiddler at night for a father.
I did.
You have a son.
I have a wonderful son who
plays. Yeah. Do you think there's something genetically being passed along the lines here that keys you in?
Oh, I do. Because Kieran's
your son, yeah.
He is. He's ever since he could walk, ever since he could talk, he's been associated with these songs. You know, he has this, he's absorbed it by osmosis. All these songs have just seeped into him. And his style of guitar playing, which is totally unique, is so influenced by the banjo. It's just incredible. I mean, he's developed amazing tunings as well. And they're not Mixolydian Aeolian tunings that the banjo uses and the dulcimer uses, but he's just, and it isn't that he frails the guitar either. It's just the whole pulse of the banjo that is just so that when we play together, it just, he's just developed a way of locking into place.
He's not here with us now, but he'll be with you on the 29th.
He surely will.
When you're playing on West Mountain.
He surely will, yeah.
Your latest CD is Sandy Boys, 15 songs. How do you decide which songs that you've collected will go onto a CD?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know. We're doing another one. Kieran's doing another one next spring, and then I'm doing one in the fall next year in the UK. We record for Fellside Records. They're the best traditional label in Britain, and they give you free rein, and I've already got songs picked out for it, but by the time it rolls around, I'll probably change my mind. I don't know, you know. But I was talking to my dear friends Julie and Joni about this yesterday, you know, that we don't believe in belaboring a recording. You know, we don't believe in just going in and you know, working for months and months and months, and every little song has to be, you know, you go over it thousands of times.
Say your father had landed in the Dakotas. Say he had ended up in Minot instead. And so instead of being around New England and the fiddle or being able to go to North Carolina and hear the banjo, you're around the accordion. Do you think you would have latched on to the...
Wow,
to that tradition?
That is the most interesting question I have ever been asked. Do you know, I cannot answer that. I have no idea what direction it would have taken me.
Because, you know,
you're absolutely,
your desire would have been there. And
well, I don't know whether it would have been, because in the Dakotas, I wouldn't have heard the wealth of songs.
But you have,
you're
gonna, you
know,
get
some
rich polka history, and I don't know.
Well, it might have been taken into me, you know, might have taken me into some kind of polka thing, but polkas don't really interest me that much. So if they don't interest me that much now, they might not have then. It's hard to know.
So you might have been taken to this instead of a tobacco auction, who knows?
That's right. You just
a beet auction or whatever they have in North Dakota, and
yeah,
it just may not have registered.
It may not have. And I would probably venture to say that my life might have gone off in a different direction.
Finally, some people collect things that are finite, whether it's, I don't know, kinds of cars or a baseball card collector, and there are only so many Mickey Mantle cards that are out there. The wonderful thing about collecting ballads and traditional songs is that that's infinite.
Absolutely.
You'll always turn the corner and find one you haven't
Absolutely.
Heard.
Absolutely. When people ask me all the time, you don't write your own songs? And I say, well, why? Why? When I'm not a writer. There are so many wonderful old songs out there, and they've been already sifted through by process of elimination. It's sort of survival of the fittest, of the great ballads and songs that have survived through a passage of time, of some of them hundreds of years, and they're not going anywhere, you know, and I feel so secure with that. I feel so that it's my role to pass these forward, you know, and that's why I'm so delighted that Kieran, I know that my repertoire anyway will be secure with Kieran, because he's so respectful of the tradition, and I know that they're in safe hands, so when I snuff it, you know, that he'll be there to, and it's just terribly important to me, you know. I know it's just a tiny little portion of it, you know. Well, we've just hit about every corner of America, and I know they're not huge. We're not going to pack stadiums or anything, but we love what we do, and we're just glad to share it with anyone who's interested.